This is netstack.fm, your weekly podcast about networking, Rust, and everything in between. You are listening to episode 38, our protocol short series, recorded on 20th May 2026. In this episode, we talk with Brecht Stamper about how Grammar helps developers build and test complex network systems more simply. Let's begin.
Welcome to another week of NetStack.fm. Today will be another protocol shorts, and with me is Brecht. He also helps to maintain Rama. We had him as a guest already in episode 23, where we talked around HTTP and using it as an application network bus. Today will be a bit different. So welcome, Brecht.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah, we were talking recently and it got to me that you are building all kind of very interesting stuff with Rama. Given that, and also the fact that you help to maintain and evolve Rama, I came to realize that there are a couple of interesting things that we could discuss together and enlighten our listeners. So maybe before we dive into technical details, can you talk a bit about the things you are building with Rama as well as within Rama?
Yes, I can. The things I'm building with Rama are mostly high throughput network moving scenarios. It's really vague because it's not a single use case, but the biggest use case is a proxy gateway like you would expect it to be. But there's a lot of side projects I'm also doing with Rama, either related to my work or for work. And open source on the Rama aspect, I'm mostly trying to improve the developer experience and make everything less magical and more explicit, which sounds boring, but it helps in maintaining stuff and making Rama easier to use for complex applications, because magic was oftentimes causing very subtle bugs which were hard to debug and slowed everything down. Clan is of the same opinion, rather be a little bit more expressive and avoid magic, but make everything clear and really scalable to however complex the application wants to be.
Yeah, totally agreed. And that was indeed always the goal, but sometimes, of course, as you're trying to find abstractions or ways that people can compose network services with the framework, you at times have accidental magic, and I'm very glad that you're helping to clean it up. Now, if we go back in time and think about how you were introduced to Rama, I remember that the concept of everything is a service was a bit overwhelming, I can say, or maybe a bit too generic. Can you maybe talk a bit about how you were looking at it and then how you slowly started to understand what it is and how you understand it right now?
Yes, I can. So when I was introduced to Rama, I was told everything is a service. Even most of the file names at that point were called service in internal code, which didn't help a lot. So to me, service was like trying to do everything with only one thing. And in the past, everything was always clear, like this is core storage, this is network layer, this is that. Suddenly everything is a service, which sounded very abstract and wrong. Service had a different meaning for me back then. But I've come to understand that service is not really an abstract idea. It's more of like a function signature that you lock in. But basically the service in Rama is nothing more than this is the input I'm expecting and this is the output I'm going to give, which allows you to stack it with other services and other layers, which is magical at certain points. As long as the input is what is expected and the output also matches, you can just stack everything and anything together, even things you should not stack, which is incredibly useful for testing things. But when you think of a service in Rama, really think of a contract between input and output signatures, nothing more, nothing less, which is a very simple idea, but it allows you to stack until like crazy complex applications, and it stays simple, magically simple. So yeah, that's kind of how it evolved for me.
And do you remember a bit, when was the moment that you came to realize, okay, now do I understand it, or did it just come very slowly and you have no idea?
At one point, I understood the idea, but I kept trying to fight it because I always thought, for this specific use case, let's make a new trait for it that describes my use case better. Like doing a particular request, you could call it do my special request, which is a little nicer to expose instead of just serve. But that opened so many issues over time. Like, I want to unit test this. Okay, I have to implement this trait. Well, for service, everything and anything implements it. So as long as the contract agrees, it just plugs in like the entire Rama code base and everything around it. Every single time you do something custom, that doesn't happen automatically. You need to do a lot of work yourself. And in the beginning, it's hard to convince people, myself included, why that is so powerful. So for everyone exploring Rama, I encourage you to just don't commit to the service ID. Try to invent your own, and you're going to very quickly realize why it's so nice and how it saves so much time.
Yeah, and of course, one reason why I initially liked it many years ago is because, okay, I can easily stack things because I compare it to functions, where a function calls another function, and similar with services, you can compose them, meaning like first I do something here, then I pass the request on, and eventually something will give me back a response, or maybe something earlier gave a response because there was an error or whatever. But then another benefit I came to realize quite quickly was the fact that, let's say I have a web server and I have now my entire composition, so like my middleware and my router, my different endpoints, so it's like fully the end system is ready there. Normally what I would have done in the past is, okay, that point I need to spawn this, or let's say bind it to a socket, and I need to test it with like a real HTTP client, which kind of means I'm also testing everything, even though I really just want to test my business logic. And with the service concept, I could just send it, give it a request, and it will give me back the response, kind of like how I'm just using a client. I don't think that's immediately clear, because it kind of ties in what you were saying, that everything is a service, and so it's hard to look past the abstraction, but it's quite beautiful, the fact that a server and a client looks the same. But I wonder, are there other examples like that you can think of that like didn't immediately were clear to you, but the fact that everything is a service, and the fact that how it composed so nicely, and the fact that it's just a simple idea, like that it unlocked things that you couldn't otherwise have done?
Maybe something I could have done in the past, but that was always annoying. In pretty much every other stack, when you want to test stuff, you have to mock it. But mocking stuff always felt like really hacky, where you patch something, you return something ugly. I remember a few months ago, gRPC support was added to Rama, which was a huge PR, and gRPC is in itself quite complex. It does a lot, but you have a gRPC client, and then you implement the service trait on the server side for the actual logic. And it was crazy simple to just unit test these things, the client and the server, without needing HTTP, without needing TCP, without all of the stuff. If you do this in other languages, you need to spawn a server, you need to do all of that stuff. Here you could just literally have the client, and instead of giving it an HTTP client to do the network stuff, you could just literally pass in the gRPC server you just made, implementing the business logic, skipping all of the network stuff, and you could instantly do all of that logic. Just put the server inside the client as the network stack, and it works, which was, again, like one of those moments I realized, wow, this is so clean, so simple, and it allows me to test these things I want to test here. Of course, I need to test the entire system. It allows you to focus on each module really clear, really simple. Another use case is, in Rama, we have a mock connector, which is basically a fake connector that gives you a stream, which allows you to do any connection test that would need TCP otherwise. If you implement the test with TCP before, they're always tricky. Like, either you spawn them on port 0, you need to wait until you get a port, then combine everything, which involves a lot of overhead, is quite slow. If you need it for a lot of tests, it adds OS complexity. If you don't care about that, like if you're implementing HTTP stuff, you don't care about TCP, you care about the TCP layer. Just get yourself a client, a server, and connect them with a fake mock connector, and focus on what that layer needs to do, which allows you to really test every layer on its own. Very simple, without bringing in everything and all the things, just for HTTP, for example. Those are some of the examples that they sound simple, but compared to in the past to doing these things and how hacky it was or how much code you needed, just works with Rama. As long as input-output match, everything just works, which is really nice.
Yeah, fully agreed. Talking about gRPC, you've been using it quite a lot in the recent months. I remember at one point you had issues. I believe it was timeout, which was the end symptom. And your solution was basically the fact that you needed a couple of low-level configs on the socket, such as TCP no delay. Can you talk a bit about that? Because like, okay, first of all, what were you noticing? And then secondly, how did you diagnose that? Because that could be quite interesting to learn about that. And then maybe finish off by how could a framework like Rama help guide the user better or even just help within its API to prevent such issues? Because I don't think most people that will use gRPC will actually know that much about TCP to even think about those things.
Okay, I noticed the issue because on all of the gRPC stuff, I have really strict timeouts, which I advise everyone to do. If you expect it to be fast, make sure it is fast. You can either crash on slow or at the very least log it if it's slow so you know it's happening. And for everything I do, I set up OpenTelemetry, which gives me metrics, traces, loss to debug these things. And quite consistently, I was seeing above 50 milliseconds for gRPC, which got me investigating, like, this is a really documented issue. It's all over the place. Basically, TCP by design doesn't send very small packets because it doesn't like that, which means it buffers them. And there's some rules about when it does send them. But gRPC happens to be almost always small messages, which means you send a message, you almost always trigger a timeout unless you're pushing more over the same connection. So you need to set TCP no delay. Most gRPC libraries do this for you, always behind the scenes. In Rama, when you use gRPC, you provide your own client, so it's not set everywhere because it's useful to not set this value for normal web traffic, but for gRPC, you do want it. That also brings an important thing with Rama. All the building blocks are there, and we also provide easy abstractions, but it's still important that you know about all of the stuff that's there if you want to do low-level stuff. So for gRPC, I imagine the thing we need to do, and it's still on my to-do, is actually document this, but we also have like the easy web client. We could also provide a gRPC web client, which does these tweaks by design or by default. So other people don't need to find this the hard way like I did. But yeah, it's really documented. It's all over the internet. So when I was searching, why is my gRPC slow? Google just gave me 50 pages with all the same answer. Is TCP no delay? I said, no, it wasn't. Yeah, that opens the door, but Rama is really powerful. You really need to tweak all of the low-level stuff as well. TCP stuff, Linux stuff, there's a lot there. But yeah, when you make a new stuff, definitely set up OpenTelemetry or at least logging so you see what's happening under the hood.
Yeah, and of course, both are integrated within Rama. And I agree, like, you can do all the low-level stuff. You can control whatever layer of the network you want. That said, as you also hinted yourself, we do provide abstractions at various layers. And for most users, I don't think they will need to tweak this. And so I think next to documenting for sure, we need to also provide an abstraction there, similar to how for most, let's say, users need to do simple HTTP API calls. There is the easy web client, like you mentioned. I think it is right to also provide something like that, like a pre-built transport client, either there or somehow provide that support within the existing client to make it easier. Because yeah, we only want them to have to worry about the network layer if they really need to, of course. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. That said, is this only like a client issue, or that's also like on the server? And then next to that, you mentioned that most gRPC implementations ship the support built in, like they have like just a single API and you get your client or whatever. So then how come they still have the issue as well, or at least some of them?
They don't really have the issue anymore, but at one point the issue was there. Someone opened a issue for it and it got fixed. The only places where it still happens is more lower level libraries where they're explicitly documented, hey, we don't set this for you for these or these reasons, but under almost all circumstances you do want to set this. Some crazy examples of where you don't want to send this: if you're sending this over a high latency network that's pretty far and you don't really care about instant gRPC responses, but you do want to send them in batches, which is almost never the use case, but libraries do give you the option in that case.
Okay, perfect. And then we started this episode around the service trait, and it went through a very big evolution. I mean, we didn't invent the concept to begin with. It came, I believe, Java library, if I remember correctly, and then it was within Tower in Rust, and then we kind of took it from there. First Tower Async, a library we made, and then finally, at Rama, we have the current version. But even then, we had in the beginning not just an input, but also a context, which was meant for like all kind of utilities, including static states. Eventually, we came to the conclusion it was the wrong abstraction. We removed that. Then we still had the fact, okay, we do need dynamic state. We have extensions. Yeah, maybe to begin, what are extensions, Brecht, and where do they live, and why do we even want them?
Okay, so let's maybe start at where extensions started. This is very similar if you've worked with other pieces of Rust code. Extensions are mostly when you need dynamic content, which is often the case in a lot of different things if you cannot predict at compile time what everyone will need. So the way it basically works in most cases is you have a hash map, and as the keys, you use type ID of a generic object. When you do type ID, Rust gives you a unique ID, which you can then use to, like, at runtime, query this in a hash map, which is also how we did it in the beginning. But the problem we noticed over time with a hash map is that people insert items, they remove items, and it becomes really hard to see what's happening under the hood, how it got there. There were leaks, different interactions of all that stuff. So instead of trying to fix this issue, which is an issue that happens all over the code base and that's also really hard to fix, we designed a new system where basically extensions would become a vector that would be append only. So you could kind of see it as a history of extensions being inserted, and you can never remove an extension. You could use logic, for example, put it to this item is used, you should not use it anymore. But it's always there, leaving a paper trail of what happened. So it's also a really nice debug tool to see what happened, where did it happen, in what order. At that point, we had a really simple vector which needed mutable reference. That was kind of working, but we kind of moved it all over the place. So when we went from a request to a connection, we just copied everything over. Same in other places, which was working for simple use cases, but for the more complex stacks, it leaked a lot of information. With leaking, I mean we transferred extensions from the request to a connection. Then when you used a connection pool, that connection still contained extensions from the original request under cases which happened to introduce bugs, all of that. And it was really only meant as an intermediate step. So the next evolution, we have a structure that is append only and read only for the other parts, which means we should be able to optimize it instead of using a normal vector, which got us to the append only vector. It's basically a data structure that can grow and where you can insert items with only access to self, no mutable reference needed, because we could use the properties of, like, we can only insert items at the back and never modify items that are already in there. By changing to reference instead of mutable reference, we could edit extensions from multiple places at once, which sounds like an anti-pattern in Rust, but is actually needed if you happen to have logic scattered in multiple places, which happens a lot for extensions, especially for connection extensions. The user would want to see what the extensions of connections are. For example, is it broken? Is it healthy? But the connection would still need to be able to edit these. So by relying on that append-only structure with only reference, we could do that, and it's already in use and it's working great so far. For the people that are already using it, if there's feedback, please open issues or message us on Discord, and we're happy to look at those. But that got us to append only vec, the latest transition was really splitting up extensions between requests and connections. So they're really seen as distinct extensions now. So when a request goes through a connector stack, we don't copy the request extensions to the connector. We only copy extensions that should become part of the connection. If you say, I want to connect only to this IP now becomes part of that connection because it is fundamentally how the connection is used. Other examples are which TLS version is being used. Once a connection is established, that should be part of the connection. If you reuse that connection again, the same information applies. If you put a retry policy on a request, we don't copy it over to the connection because a follow-up request might not want to use that. So they're really distinct. They also fork at logical places, meaning when you have a connection, extensions are passed through. If you go from TCP to TLS, we reuse the same extension because logically it's still the same connection. However, when you do multiplexing, which HTTP2 does when it's using a stream, we fork extensions. So they have a new storage. They still keep the original extensions as parent. So all the stuff that's in there still applies to a stream. But a stream has also its own storage, two stream-specific storage things. Examples there are, it is possible that a stream is broken, but the connection is not broken. So in that case, we insert connection is broken on the stream, but not on the connection, which allows us to do a lot of complex things. And this is also made to work around upgrades, because upgrades are complex items. If you do an upgrade on HTTP1, you kind of replace the HTTP with the upgrade you just did. Nice, this is easy. But if you upgrade over HTTP2, you're basically nesting a completely new connection inside a stream, which could be doing TLS again, which could be doing a lot of other things again. And things inside that connection don't really affect the outer connection. So they should be isolated, but they should still have access to the underlying connection because they do still run over that connection. This system allows that. It works magically, is kind of the word, which is something we're removing. But here it is needed to like just be transparent about the network stack. But it also gives you all the building blocks to go as crazy as you want with this.
Yeah, and part of the complexity or the difficult problem space is, of course, because Rama is a modular framework. It gives you all these building blocks, but you can compose them how you want within the bounds of contracts as specified by network specifications, of course, otherwise you will get other issues. But as long as you respect the different specifications or how the world operates, you can make up whatever stack you want, and Rama makes it pretty easy. In contrast to that, you would need to otherwise either write all the network and protocol code yourself, which I don't think anybody does. Instead, what most people would do is they either go for like a black box solution where they can just use a config file or something, if that at all, or they would glue together all kind of random libraries, but of course plenty of mistakes and imperfections get made while trying to glue these things. Instead, Rama has all these building blocks, they work nicely together, you can compose them, but because we cannot predict how the user will compose them, we of course don't want to put them into a surprise scenario where they compose it somehow, things happen with these extensions because how they passed around, and now they get into weird situations, which, like you mentioned, we had, because you could remove extensions and maybe then it no longer contained information it should have contained, or maybe it shouldn't have, and it got pretty messy. And I'm pretty happy that's where we are now, as I believe right now you can stack without any fear, and I certainly didn't see any surprise anymore since we arrived at this new design. I'm not sure how you see it evolving from here, Brecht.
I think the extension stuff is mostly finished, the core logic, but we do have a lot of other things that are using extensions, mainly around TLS special builders. Around these TLS boring builders, they were designed before this new extension logic was there, so they kind of solved this problem on their own in a thing that worked at that point of time, but it's quite a complex struct. There's quite a lot of weird things the first time you see it. So the way I see it evolving is now rely on the new extension logic, really rely on the features it offers, and simplify all the users of the extension logic by relying on what extensions offer. But yeah, that's mainly the extensions it.
Okay, very cool. And then to round off this episode, you've been now not only like a maintainer of Rama, you're already that for quite a while. You've been using Rama now already at several companies as well as for stuff that you do in your free time, sometimes related to work, sometimes not. Can you think of any story like, okay, I'm using Rama now here and it really helped me to unlock something that otherwise would be pretty difficult, if not impossible to do?
Okay, impossible is a big word because, yeah, nothing is impossible. It's just, it might be impossible in the required time frame, but that's where Rama shines so much. Like, I've been surprised so many times where I implemented like complex proxy stack or a complex network stack in so little time, and it just worked, like very little time. And when I do all of these things, I always add tests as well. Adding these tests is so simple with Rama as well. All of the core stuff, it just works, which is nice. I could do this without Rama. And let's say I stay in the Rust ecosystem, I would have used Tower, Hyper, and Tonic probably. But when I combine all pieces, there's always so much glue I need to write myself, like a huge amount of glue. And Rama solves this by being a monorepo, basically, that just has one standard way of doing everything. It's applied very consistently everywhere, and all pieces just work together. Like, if you use gRPC, okay, you're kind of in HTTP world, you can use all the HTTP stuff. The same kind of applies in Tower world, but the Tower ecosystem is kind of stuck on an older Rust version, which makes this way more painful. It's also way less consistent, and the core logic is there, but all of the stuff that combines it is not, and it's often there that the most subtle bugs exist and where you lose a huge amount of time. So yeah, Rama is just so nice. It combines everything.
Okay, very cool. And where do you see its future going? How do you see Rama evolving in the future, and what do you expect from it yourself, both as a maintainer as well as a user of it?
In the short term, I mostly see Rama evolving on a feature set. Like, there's some really nice things that we still need to add to Rama. Perfect example of that is HTTP3 and Quick Protocol, because that unlocks so many new use cases again. Like, once you have that, you can go really crazy. Like, you can already go really crazy, but that's like a fundamental piece in the modern world that's still missing. So short term, I really see Rama adding more features or more developer tools to make things easier, to make things better to work with, to debug. Recently, Dial9 was added, which again will help a huge amount to debug these crazy OS issues or Tokyo issues where something is stalled that you never expected to stall. So short-term feature-wise, then long-term, I really see us focusing on speed, performance, throughput, and just maxing out hardware easily. And the nice thing is, if you just update Rama, you will get all of this for free, basically, which has been the case in a lot of places where I use Rama. Every update, I can remove a lot of special workarounds and stuff I have in code just because right now Rama has solved this automatically for me, and it just works probably better than the stuff I have. That doesn't mean I don't need logic anymore, but it just, I can rely way more on the core logic, which also means if I need it in other projects, I can just do that without having to reinvent everything.
Yeah, exactly, because anyway, you might be able to do it, but it distracts you from the business logic. A lot of subtle things can go wrong. And then everybody is basically solving the same bugs, if they find them at all, because there are so many ways to run something. And I keep getting surprised by it, is because right now, Rama is getting used in more and more different scenarios, different platforms, different use cases. The amount of bugs that come in is very little, but when they come in, they're very interesting always. And it's solved one, and then, like you said, once it's solved, you do an update and you just get it the fix for free, which you wouldn't really get otherwise, because you also mentioned, okay, I had this TCP no delay issue. Okay, I had to look it up. You see in your Google results, because you're using Google, like, I'm getting 50 pages of people getting the same issue, and that's the kind of thing that you would get for thousands and thousands of different issues if you need to start building yourself with these low-level components, gluing it yourself together, trying to figure out how to compose this, how to work with this. And that was always a goal to solve that. Giving someone the power to program their own stack, because you do want to program it. You don't want to have to resort to some silly YAML file or something like that, where you're almost pseudo-programming in a config language, which will happen sometimes. But at the same time, you don't want to have to program everything yourself either. So I'm very, very happy that's working out.
I do have another example of something I didn't think about, but just noticed that you fixed kind of recently, is the system resolver in Linux. It's just blocking by design. If you want to do it properly, you need to spawn blocking in Tokyo. But if you have a high throughput proxy, for example, that can easily run out of blocking threads. But Rama, if you use a system resolver, it has a small cache implemented for you to work around this problem. It's just one of these things you don't think about when developing these types of applications, that you need to think about the DNS resolver being slow on your system, or not slow, expensive to call, basically.
Very much agreed. And of course, when things do go wrong or things can be improved, we always accept contributions. Everybody developing network services might have opinions or ideas, or might notice things. And yeah, to highlight again, we will just have to fix it once and we all benefit from it. So it's very much a community project. And I'm also very happy that you are part of it, Brecht. And thank you for your view on the project today here in the podcast, as well as the explanation about extensions and how you got here and how you came to understand services.
Thanks. It was fun.
All right. Bye-bye.
NetStack.fm is brought to you by Rama, an open source framework for moving and transforming network packets. Rama is built and maintained by Plavio, a company focused on secure, open, and resilient infrastructure with Rust protocols and purpose. The theme music of this podcast was composed by DJ Mailbox. For more conversations like this, subscribe so you don't miss what's coming next. And if you know someone who could benefit from this episode, share it with them. They might appreciate it. Have experience in protocols, networking, or infrastructure, and want to share your work, your ideas, or experience? We would love to hear from you. Reach out at hello@netstack.fm. Thank you for being here. See you next time for the next handshake.